So today, as you see, there is this topic, there is only one of us, which of course we've talked about before, so that doesn't seem to be very special, but actually there is something very special about it. I have personally been going through a lot of introspection and trying to deeply understand how I work as a person and how I could generalize that to other persons or generalize that to an understanding of the universe. Masha, just lower the Gaur, just lower his transmission just a tad, because it still every now and then just clicks because he's going over. When I think about life, I think about life as a series of events where one tries to come together with others and then needs some time apart. It's like a constant connection and separation. I see this oscillation. I see this rhythm. It seems to be a long scale rhythm. It's a rhythm which goes on in a way which is very deep within me, at least, or within others, perhaps. So it made me start to think. It made me start to contemplate about existence and the meaning of our being. I know that in previous times, a very often discussed question is, why are we here? And a corollary of that is, how did we come here? What was the mechanism by which we came here? Some people argue about having come from the spiritual world. Others say we were always here and have to go to the spiritual world. These are typical discussions. As far as I see it, I don't think those discussions are so important, because they always accept the spiritual world as being some separated place and coming here as some separation from or division from that spiritual place, which is part of that disintegrative philosophy we have discussed, this keeping everything separated from each other. I like to look at it from the integrative point of view, which is that all things are there and one can reach for them from here without considering the separation of so-called distance or time. It's just a separation of consciousness. Any separations there are between ourselves and the Supreme or ourselves and any other person are due to our willful conscious decision to make such a separation. We decide to think in this disintegrative way for many reasons, and therefore we do it. Now, using myself as a laboratory for experimental purposes, I have been experimenting with seeing things separate and seeing things together by my own conscious decision. I see things separately when it is for me advantageous to do so. When I wish to assert my will as a separate being, I can see that way and I do become separate. It's factual. And at the same time, I see myself when I wish to do so, when I make the choice to do so, as together with things by my own conscious choice. And it is factually so. I see this in relationship to people. I see this in relationship to organizations. I see this in relationship to countries. I see this in relationship to family. I see it in every situation that my conscious choice determines my integration or disintegration. I am the one who is directing my consciousness to feel connected with something or to feel separate from something. I found this to be a very interesting experience, even though surely, intellectually, it's an obvious thing. But to actually experience your power of will is a very, very interesting thing. So I understood that the most significant factor in all of this is my will. Now, I know that this could be translated to my choices, But I want to use the word will, because the word will, or shall we say the concept of will, my willpower, my will, what I will have, what is to be, is more powerful even than the choices I make. This will that I manifest is actually right at the very bottom of my essence of being. It's my fundamental manifestation of me. Now, surprisingly, this led me to another field or another conceptual experimental ground, which was a little bit shocking, and I'd like to share with you. I saw that I've thought a lot about the concept of soulmates in the past, but soulmates as such, this is not a very, shall we say, extraordinary concept. It is something which is rather normal. It is something we all can relate to as we relate to family or we relate to friends or to lovers. These soulmates we meet in our life in different roles where they help us, where they assist us when we need to have such assistance. They are very close to us and our relationships are very deep instantaneously. They may even take the role of our enemy just to help us move out of a position we are stuck in or to make us realize something. Whatever they do, it's beneficial for us because they are soulmates. They are persons who are within our group, who are within our group of souls. They are within our family of souls where we feel a soul-based affinity with these people. Now, we are all familiar with this. We have all experienced this in our lives. We all understand this quite well, whether or not we have been able to pin down a category or a term such as soulmates by which to describe it. But factually, we have experienced it in our lives, or at least we should have, because these experiences of connecting with such personalities, they are so enlivening to us. It could be in either way enlivening. They are so giving us depth in our consciousness, depth in our being. Now, this concept of soulmates has been discussed exhaustively in many books and literatures, and especially the books by Newton, who has documented this from 40,000 case studies of persons who he has dealt with in his practice over many, many years. But there is something that I want to talk about, which I have been very seriously contemplating, which is, I think, more to the essence, more to the point of answering the question about our being. And I'd first like to start off by talking about the concept according to the way it's understood today. But then I'm going to go a little bit further into what I have realized in my experimental laboratory of being. Now, some people have gotten to the point of speaking about twin souls, or souls which in the beginning were one, but divided for the reason of self-exploration and expansion to go through parallel existences separate from each other, but to again reunite as one soul in the future. Now, this is different from the concept of soulmates, because soulmates are personalities who you feel very good with together. You feel a long-term spiritual affinity for each other. This can be people who you have love affairs with, people who you have life relationships as friends with, people you just feel very, very close with because they are of your spiritual family, your spiritual group. But twin soul is something quite different. It's another level of intensity, another level of crystallization of being. It's one personality dividing into two for purposes of growth or discovery. Now, for a long time, I accepted that. I thought that was a very reasonable concept. I thought it also fit in my life. I said it made a lot of sense. Yet, at the same time, Because I always think of the relationship of Radha and Krishna as being the seed relationship for all existence everywhere throughout creation. I wonder, I said, that concept doesn't really work between them and us. So there's like a disparity there. And it always made me have a doubt. But I pushed aside this doubt thinking that, well, maybe I just don't catch it, or maybe there's more to it, or maybe that's just the way it is. What we are getting in this situation when we try to make everything work harmoniously is that sometimes things which we, when I mean harmoniously, I mean in the whole universe, making a universal harmony that resonates in a similar manner amongst all persons, is that you sometimes see things which are aberrations. And therefore, whenever I see these aberrations or things which do not fit within that harmony, I wonder about them. I want to investigate them more in this experimental laboratory of life. So during such times, I basically become very quiet and walk around thinking a lot. But just the other day, I had a breakthrough and I'd like to share it with you, if you don't mind. I thought about the twin souls. And when I thought about the twin souls, I thought, now, if you are divided, there's always this magnetic desire to be one again. So you have the twin soul, which has separated, which is now developing in two different ways, in two different personalities, throughout time. And you have these souls who always feel that there's something, some person they need to connect with. They always feel there's somebody out there for me. There's something that they're connected to. They feel some kind of a complementary harmony, but they're not exactly sure about it. And the more they become, balanced in their male and female energies, because usually these twin souls split off into male and female portions, but the more that each of them become balanced in their male and female energies, the closer and closer they become energetically. Harmonically, they become closer in resonance. They're linked together in a kind of a resonance, a dance of evolution. And after a long time, they can meet again with the desire to practically become one, to merge in their relationship, to merge again into one complete being. But then they meet, of course, it's very nice, it's very wonderful, it's illuminating, it's ecstatic, and they have enormous, extraordinary experiences together. And they know that there's going to be this merging of connection back to this one greater being, this one greater whole. But there's some fear in that, because there'll be a loss of that individuality, that capacity to manifest their will that has been there, their freedom that has been there through all of this time during this separation. So there's a kind of resistance. There's a kind of magnetic attraction, and yet there's also a kind of resistance when one thinks, I don't know if I like this merging together jazz and becoming one soul. And when either of them think in terms of this uniting again as one soul, they think of it in terms of, well, we'll do that, but with my will dominating. And the other thinks in the same way. Yes, there'll be this merging, how wonderful, this uniting as one soul, but with my will dominating. But it doesn't even matter that one does what the other wants. It's just a question of the will wishing or feeling itself in the dominating position. And then I'm contemplating, what does this mean? There's actually very deep meaning to this. Even if one doesn't get its way, that's not the point. The point is to have that feeling that I am the dominating consciousness. Even if one is freed from all desires to exploit others, even if one is not concerned with having others do what they want, even if one is quite happy within oneself, still one has this enormous feeling that their will must manifest. And then it kind of hit me in a very big flash of exactly what is going on and how this does relate harmonically with Radha and Krishna and with all of existence. Actually, you have this situation where nobody wants to lose their will. Nobody wants to lose their individuality to another. Now, some may think that's okay if they are going to do that in relationship to the supreme energy, the all that is. Somehow that's less fearful. But when you have to do that in relationship to another person, all of a sudden it becomes a battle of the wills. And then you get this enormously unique situation where twin souls who so much want to be one, so much don't want to be one. It becomes like a ballroom dance where you throw your partner apart but still hold on, and then pull your partner in tight and hold on tight. It's like this Latin dance, this rumba, this samba, this you're just coming apart, coming together, and just apart together in a rhythmic dance. Because there is a movement there, there is a motion there is a rhythm there is a beat to it. Sometimes you have this understanding that very evolved spiritual things will be very peaceful and very much in touch with all that is in a completely peaceful, undisturbed consciousness. And certainly, that is true. Yet at the same time, you have this situation where there is this manifestation of energy, this manifestation of relationships, of actions, of doing things. So I see it as a different stages or different states of consciousness where one can be in that way or one can be in this way. Let's look at it this way. Let's look at it from this point of view and see if this speaks to us in any particular personal way. Let's say those two souls which were twin souls were never really one soul. They never really were merged together as one soul. Let's just assume that. Let's just assume, for the sake of argument, that they were one soul, in fact, but not actually as one physical, so to speak, unit. But they had this spiritual unity, this spiritual feeling of oneness with the other, that they were actually two halves of the whole, like a pot and a cover, or two halves together. And let's say that these two halves in their consciousness needed to find their individuality, so they engaged in a journey of individual development by manifesting their own will. And let's say the whole point of this journey was to figure out a way in which they could be one and yet fully respect, fully appreciate, and fully facilitate the willful activity of the other as an individual. Sometimes in a garden, you will see there's one root under the ground where two plants manifest up from that one root, but you see two individual plants there that are manifesting somewhat differently. But there's one root. There's one essence of that plant, but it is manifesting in two ways. So the two plants, they're growing side by side. They cannot be anything else but side by side. But they are manifesting in that way as two individual yet extremely similar beings. There is no need for them to become one branch of that plant, because they are very pleasantly situated as two. And they are giving full freedom and full facility to the other to manifest just as the other wishes. There's no question of separation, and there's no need for a merging into one body. For when there is that oneness, then there is always that connection. So, thinking of twin souls does not necessarily mean you were one and have to again become one. It can mean you were perfectly suited as the two halves of the whole, and yet when you try to manifest it according to your willfulness, the journey is to learn how to accept that with full freedom and unconditional acceptance. But with that oneness of being, with respect for the willfulness of each. And if you think about it like that, all the anxiety or all of the fear that comes from this very threatening experience of merging as one soul is relieved. Now let's expand that harmonically to the Supreme, to Radha and Krishna, to the existence everywhere. If you think of it as, let's first of all understand the Supreme in terms of expansion and contraction. When everything is expanded very far in all directions, there is less tendency for action because it's just a homogeneous consciousness of all things everywhere. And in that state there is peace, in that state there is tranquility, in that state there is all knowingness, all connectedness to everything. Because the vibration is very deep and long, it's very subtly manifesting throughout the whole existence. And if you take that long frequency of harmony and you compress it, as you compress it, the frequency expands faster because the borders of it which bind its vibration come closer, so the reflection becomes faster. You see faster frequency as the space becomes smaller. So when you get to the universal level, let's say Lord Shiva, just for example, the compression is less, of course, than the everything everywhere, and there is a movement and a power in that. And as you come down, but time is also expanded that way, as you come down closer to us, as it becomes much smaller, the movement is much faster, and time goes much faster, because everything is vibrating much quicker. So, as things are very, very wide and expansive, they're so broad and peaceful as they come closer and closer and closer in, they start to get more intense. I'm not sure how that point is relevant to the other point I'm about to make, but I just thought it was very interesting to share that with you. So let's think of it that there is only one soul in all existence. There's only one spirit in all of existence. And all of us have this feeling of this oneness within us. Yet each of us is also manifesting our will, our beingness as these individuals. So we simultaneously have this feeling of the oneness of all things, and yet the thought of coming together to lose that with a particular individual, as we had in the previous example, makes us a bit fearful of losing our willfulness, our individuality as a willful being. That is why some people who are absorbed in the oneness of all things come to the conclusion of themselves as God, because it is the manifestation of their will, that they still have their will. As God, they have their will, even though they're one with everything. Whereas others who are even more afraid to go to that oneness, they want to maintain, fear without pejorative there, they want to maintain their specific willful individuality, maintain their willfulness as their own individual selves. So we have the situation where even if you're into that total oneness of the absolute, or you are as an individual, both wish to manifest their oneness. They just do it, their individuality of willfulness, not oneness, and they just do it in different ways. So it's that willfulness which is the real essential energy here that we are discussing. So this feeling of wanting to be totally connected with Radha and Krishna, to be totally connected with our twin, to be totally connected, therefore, with all others as one being we are, and yet the willfulness that it is me who is doing that is natural. There is this constant and unavoidable will that is within all. Now, there are many discussions and there are many philosophies which deal with the situation about losing that will or negating that will or being freed from all that willfulness. But I don't really want to touch that at this point because I don't think it's relevant to this discussion. Neither would I try to negate those understandings or philosophies because they all fit within that oneness of what we are. So, therefore, from this point of view, it is easy to understand how there really is only one of us. Or in the Vedic language, eko bahusham, the one becomes many. Or the one is always one and many at the same time. That is Lord Chaitanya's gift to us, this comprehensive, harmonious understanding of how the one is one and the one is many at the same time. One in feeling, one in love, one in connection to all, and many in will, many in the desire to be individual. And the harmony, universal harmony, will come when we allow everyone the freedom to feel like that, which means to stop within ourselves saying, you cannot do that. You cannot feel that. You cannot be that. Now, naturally, there is a better way to do things. There is also a not so good way to do things. But what is most important is that one has the freedom. One can manifest the will to do, to be exactly what it is that one wishes to manifest. Because when one can manifest in such a way, one will be able to feel, to be, to experience exactly what it is that one is, which is the only way to gain a satisfaction. So, I'd like to end there, this part of the program, because I feel that is a very complete topic in and of itself that I wanted to share, and perhaps the implications of it will take some time to think sink in, certainly. And we take a little break. We can come back and take some questions and answers and finish off with a meditation for the night, if that's okay. So we'll take like a 10-minute break right now. And I also want to sort out some technical problems which are just nonstop there. So there may be a break in the transmission for some time because everything seems to be quite frozen everywhere. Okay? I would like to just address this question about eternal mates from a few different points of view, because this question is not as Well, the answer to this question, I'd say the topic is not as clear-cut as it seems. Now, twin souls, would you call them mates, actually? That is a little difficult to think about, to be a mate with a twin soul. It's a very interesting question. And yet at the same time, don't twin souls challenge each other to become more and more evolved as that one great person they are? And yet, can a twin soul be with anyone else in that relationship? It's impossible. For example, Shiva and Parvati, could they be anything but together? Can Radha and Krishna be anything but together? There's another question Mahabhuta was asking. For twin souls, separation must be unbearable. I would say they can't live separate. After they meet in one lifetime, a separation would be a tragedy. And yes, that's absolutely true. But are they mates? Does a twin soul think of itself when it is together as mates? I don't think so. In other words, I think things become very complex when it becomes very complex when you try to take it's very complex when you try to take a twin soul and compare it to a perfect husband and wife. I think it's mixing things in a way in which they don't belong. Now, I know that sounds very strange, but it makes more sense when you think of it from the point of view of a twin soul is one soul, but living as two. So they don't really need to be bound in marriage. You know what I mean? They don't need to be bound in a formalized relationship because they are always, their consciousness is very harmonically related. It's the yin and yang of a consciousness. Now, those who get married usually get married because they need to somehow or another display or solidify or somehow or another formalize their relationship of being together. You're broadcasting too loud again. Yeah. So, but for those two souls who are vibrating basically in the same way, for them there is no question of separation. They are always that way. They don't need any formal recognition of it. You know, it may seem as if these external forms of connection in a formalized way create some kind of a higher connection, but actually they do not. And the idea of attaining all one's ideals, of having the other part of yourself fulfilling you in all ways, is the very reason you don't come together with your other half. When you are thinking that this person, this other person, outside of me, separate from me, is now going to fulfill me, is now going to make me happy or fulfill my needs or desires, then you are not in the state of sufficiency in yourself so much that you are have the capacity to be one with your twin. You've got demands. You've got some kind of bondage, some kind of a restriction that now your life is meant to somehow or another interface or to complement my life so that I become fulfilled and happy. Whereas when there is that oneness, there's no need to take, there's no need to no need to take. There's no need to demand anything from the other. Just to be together is all you need. In one case, you're talking about doing together, having some kind of practical refreshment or regeneration or some kind of nourishment from the other. Whereas in the other case, you're talking just about being, just simply being together. So you can think about relationships as practical, or you can think about relationships as mutually nourishing, to come to some peace or some kind of stability. Or you can think about the twins in relationship of just being, that knowing and being and watching each other or feeling each other as simply one personality. It's totally different than requiring nourishment or requiring something to be done. So if you think about it like this, you start to see things a little bit differently. You start to see things from another point of view, which makes you feel very differently about yourself or your other half. These different situations, these different kinds of concepts, which are so, in one sense, new and on the other hand, quite ancient and inherent, are not so easy to generalize to absolutely every single person. It's very difficult. Now, I know that what Mahabhuta asks is a very, very deep question, that separation for such souls would be unbearable. Yes, it would. However, here's where we come again to similarities with the spiritual when we speak about the concept of love and separation. Is there really a separation? Sure, there is separation. Sure, there is a lack of proximity between such souls. Absolutely. But actual separation? No, I don't think that's ever possible. That separation is only manifested in so much as we wish it to be so. When we will that separation, we become separated. When we will that separation to not be, then it will not be. We will always be connected. That's what we do, after all, in our meditations. We connect. So still you have both, on both sides, you have this separation and connection as this dance of energy where one is pulled this way and that way. It keeps things alive. It keeps things from becoming stagnant. I think stagnation is probably the worst possible thing that can happen to anybody. Stagnation is something which is really the death of a spirit being. A living being is always dynamic. A living being is always moving, is always very, it's always progressive. It's a progressive thing, life. Experience of life of the soul is very progressive. It's always moving. So I think that if such souls coming together, if they're coming together caused a stagnation or a bondage or some kind of situation where the will felt like it was being suffocated, separation would be a good thing for both to learn the art of freedom. Oh, yeah. I mean, these are not easy questions, sure. Absolutely not easy questions. It's not like we're discussing everyday subject matters, like, you know, how you cook a certain recipe or how you deal with something of this world that everybody knows about all the time. These are very, very deep, fundamental, essential questions that most people don't even get a chance to deal with in this lifetime. I mean, I know, of course, that anybody can discuss these things from a conceptual point of view, from a point of view of a philosophical, interesting discussion, but how many actually have a realization of these things where they can see how it's working in actual fact? Very few. And don't forget that those who have such experience know that when twin souls come together who are not ready to do so, they can burn each other up in the fire of self-destruction. Therefore, awareness and being able to see and to be able to feel where the pitfalls are is very important for actually coming to a strong and stable situation of personal and interrelational peace. So I think these are questions which are good to talk about. They are points which are good to understand, because at one point in your existence, you're going to have to deal with this. And when you do, it's very, very good to be prepared to some extent. And it's very, very important to push in the direction of making such connection, because it's what helps one become complete. It's what helps one actually grow. It's giving impetus. It's a catalyst. So I know that I'm not perfectly answering that question which came from St. Petersburg, but I'm trying to give some direction how to answer it yourself, which I think is more important than me answering it for you. Because anyway, whatever answer I give you, it only works if the answer is within you, or it resonates within you. So therefore, you are ultimately the one who will answer your own question. I can simply point to where within yourself you can find it. Now, that's a very interesting point right there, which I think we should discuss. I very much do not feel that I'm over here and you're all out there. I'm talking to all of you. I see it more that my whole service is simply to suggest ways in which you can find all answers within yourself, because they are all there. I mean, there's no answer that is within me that cannot be within you, because you and I, we are very similar. Our capacity to understand and to know is quite similar. It's just that, let's say I've been in this experimental laboratory with a more intense concentration so that I can help you to point out where you could look in your experimental laboratory. I really can't stand the situation of having to be in a position where I sit here, I tell you something, you listen to it, you learn it. That's totally unacceptable to me as a person. I just don't relate to it. I don't feel good about it. Actually, I can do that very well. I could stand up with like a blackboard and be a teacher and talk at you and just throw all kinds of things at you. I'm very good at that. But I wouldn't be able to live with myself for doing such a thing. I feel quite happy if I can simply reach into, shall we say, toolboxes, generic toolboxes that everybody has, and point out how to use the tools there. You can take this hammer and break down this door that you've got inside. You can take this screwdriver and unscrew where you're all screwed up. You can take this knife and you can cut the tape that you've put across your mouth. You can cut the ropes that you've tied yourself up with. I can also be the coach on the sidelines, cheering on the team, saying, "You can do it! You can do it! You guys are great! You've got power! You've got capacity! You're just super! You have absolutely full control over how you choose to use your energy, how you choose to use your will, or even how you feel about manifesting it." Now, you know, that's a totally different way of dealing with people. It means that I have faith in you. I trust you. I suppose that's because I have faith in me and I trust me. And I'm definitely not better or very different than you. I mean, for example, I just got this question from Moscow, which I felt in the beginning was like, oh, one of these questions. But now I want to answer it in this way. They're saying that previously I said, if you chant 16 rounds a day and follow the four regular principles, I will bring you back to Godhead. And I just simply wrote back, that's silly. But actually, it's not a silly thing to ask, because it was, of course, the so-called contract at that time. But the deficiencies, the illusion in that way of seeing things is really something interesting to talk about, and that's what I've been talking about here. That I'm going to tell you what to do. If you just do what I tell you to do, then I guarantee you're going to get that result. This is, if I were to do that, I would have to feel myself very pompous. You know, I would have to feel myself very, like some big, you know, extraordinary deity who can fulfill desires by simply guaranteeing them to be so. Pompous is the right word, though. Even if you don't listen to your rounds, if you want to do that, even if you are frustrated personality following some principles, I guarantee you're going to get somewhere. This is so completely unaware of the reality of consciousness, of the reality of evolution. That question went on to ask, they said that they think I'm an honest person, and I'm probably still an honest person, so they're a little bewildered how I have changed from the point of saying, just do this, do this, do this, everything will be great, to just try to find out what you have within you. I will help you to do that, and you will find your way. It seems so contradictory. It seems 180 degrees different, which it is. Well, since that person or whoever they are recognized that I am an honest person, and certainly I am being very honest right now when I say that I just can't do that anymore. It's not honest for you. I may have believed it to some extent in the past. I do not at all believe it now, this former way of seeing things. No matter what you follow, no matter what you believe, it is still your responsibility as a person to find out what is within you, because it is only that which is within you that can connect to the Supreme. Therefore, how can I sit here and present myself as somebody who is instructing you or teaching you or leading you? These are all misnomers. These are misrepresentations. If you've ever noticed that sometimes when I'm giving lectures, in the beginning, it's very hard for me to be very consistently coherent. And inside me, I feel very agitated. I feel very disturbed within, because I'm like trying to find a way to connect with everybody who are all different. I feel the consciousness of the different people who are connected. I feel how divergent they are, how they're all coming from different places, and they are all feeling different, thinking different, acting different, have different ages and problems and situations, and it's very chaotic. And so, how I deal with that, I have to really work at it. I have to actually very seriously try to make a vibration such that everybody is invited to sit consciously on the same platform, where we all sit with our consciousness, where we all exist with our consciousness in a similar place. Not that I'm over there and you're over there. We all have to be in the same place. So it takes me a while to just invite and convince everybody that sitting together as one group of consciousness is a good thing. It's good for all of us. And when this is done, what happens is that we have an enormous capacity to communicate as beings should communicate on a deeper level without this external better and worse and you're going to learn and I'm going to give and you don't know and I know kind of dichotomy. Because when we are standing together as souls, we only then have a chance to share how we use the tools that are within us in a very complementary way, in a way which is very useful, not only to us, but to all others that we come in contact with. So it is very important to me that we do have this feeling of togetherness, and that we do work together in our consciousness so that I can simply serve by pointing out where to find those tools by which you can find that essence within you, which is what you are, and which allows you to connect to all the greatest potential that you have within you, and to manifest that potential. So, I suppose finding the word to give a label of what it is that we are doing here is the hard part, I would say, simply. It's a sharing of souls. It's a sharing of energy. It's a sharing of experiences. It's a process of discovery rather than a process of simply dictation from above. Because it's only what you discover within yourself. It's only what you experience within yourself. It's only the strength you have within yourself, which is the real experience of life, the real experience of evolution, the real experience of your expansion and progression. You can't have your experiences just by reading in books or by thinking about them or by talking about them. They are things which have to be felt on all levels, because that's what experience means. Let me just give you an example which will help amplify that point. Let's say, for instance, you are remembering something you did in the past. But when you have the feeling that's represented by that, the feeling that that memory brings about, then you are having an experience right now in the present. It's not just an image. So it's not just a question of a memory or an image or a word or a book. It's the feelings that are evoked, the movement of your energy that is evoked in this. It is essential that there is an evocation of consciousness. And that is the whole point of what we are doing here, to create an evocation of consciousness, to draw out the juice, that essence, that taste, that very particular beauty that is each and every one of us. And I hope that did answer to a certain extent that question that came there in Moscow. I'm getting a question from Argentina. What about feeling separate from people because they are, quote unquote, bad people? And now I get, you know is no bad people. Why do you think, but they aren't another way to see the world? Okay, now, why do you think that feeling a separation is somehow not a good thing? I never said, and I don't think you feel either, that you have to be connected to every single individual in this world, no matter their qualities or whether or not there's some compatibility with you. I never said that. What? So you shouldn't think that. Neither should you think that. You know, one of the main problems that I think occur when you accept some philosophical concept without really the experience of it is that, don't connect to me, okay? It screws up. Is that you start to wonder when you feel, you see the differences between people, when you see there's something better and something worse, when there's something you would think is not good. So you feel guilty about that. People feel that they have a certain responsibility as spiritualists to like everybody and that others should like them. Now, that's an idealistic way of looking, and that's, of course, very laudable, because idealism is laudable. It's something which is, of course, natural to spiritualists. But it's not realistic. And because we are real people with real feelings and real energy, realistically speaking, you have to be able to discriminate. I can deal with that. I can accept that. I don't want to deal with that. In other words, that one has to accept, one has to allow that there is this situation where not all things right now fit within that oneness of a peaceful, compatible situation. There is a oneness in the sense that, let's say you meet somebody you call as bad, and then you react negatively to them. You react with an aggression towards them. The oneness of your connection will be that your energy will turn back at you. Yet at the same time, if you accept, there is that difference there. I accept the difference. I accept my energy is different from that energy. I accept that there will not be a connection between me and them at this time. You can live peacefully and they can evolve in a more peaceful way without more aggression. When you connect in a oneness with all, you do it in a meditative state and you just simply offer good energy to that all others. When you connect individually, you do the same thing. But you also choose not to connect when there are situations which warrant it. So it is good to see things from different points of view, to see things as individual as they are.